Welcome to the first ever live PFF college football show. Max Chadwick alongside Dalton Wasserman here, previewing and predicting the five biggest games of week one. Dalton kind of spoiling what games we're previewing right here on the desk. But man, I'm excited to do these live shows with you every Tuesday night now at 6 p.m. Eastern time and every Sunday morning at around 9 a.m. Eastern time. We're going to be live recapping the previous day of college football, man. So I'm excited to be live on air with you, man.
Absolutely. We got the start of the full season coming, and what a week zero we had, right?
Oh, man.
The season of chaos, I've been calling it, started with just the right amount of chaos. We only had a handful of games, but already a top 10 upset, already just even the lower level games, chaotic games, the New Mexico game, the SMU-Nevada game. I mean, it's college football is back in the biggest way, isn't it?
Okay, first of all, before we start, we got to give Dalton Wasserman his flowers, man, because in our Florida State-Georgia Tech preview, you said exactly, I'm picking Georgia Tech to win, and I think it's going to be a close game. I think Georgia Tech will win by a field goal. Well, Georgia Tech won by exactly a field goal as time expired in that game, man. So you nailed that Florida State-Georgia Tech prediction, man. Congratulations.
Absolutely. Look, you know, first, stay hot. We'll see if we can go 5-for-5 today. But, no, I mean, look, Georgia Tech has an ascending offense. They showed that the second half of last year. They showed it again. And even when there was difficulties and they went down early, right, the first drive, it didn't look so good for them. But big credit to Tyler Santucci and their defense as well. Played a lot better than really at any point they had played last year. And, honestly, you know, people are going to look at Georgia Tech, oh, they're this grinding, running team. But they had to be against Florida State. There's other games where they're going to be a huge threat because they like to go up tempo and have Haynes King throw the ball as well. That was just where the game script took them. But no, they played a great game, and honestly, we've got a lot to talk about with both Florida State and Georgia Tech moving forward, even before we get to week one.
Honestly, I wanted to say the one thing that didn't really surprise me in that game was the fact that Georgia Tech's offense was able to be so successful running the ball with that option game, right? Because we broke it down in our preview saying, hey, Florida State going east to west defensively, they had problems last year, and they had problems in this game as well. What shocked me in this game was how well Georgia Tech defended the run. Because my side of the preview, I said, hey, Georgia Tech last year had one of the worst run defenses in the Power 5, and they didn't really bring in too many star transfers to like help out with that, right? So my MVP of that game is a guy you just mentioned, Tyler Santucci, the new defensive coordinator for Georgia Tech, because, man, they were filling the gaps in the run game. They were playing run defense perfectly. It was like night and day compared to last year, man, and a lot of it was the same players from last year as well. So all the credit in the world to Tyler Santucci for stopping Florida State's run game. And when you do that, then all of a sudden DJ has to drop back and pass and win them the game, and he honestly couldn't do it for them that game.
Yeah, no, and I mean, that's always been the thing with DJ Uiagalelei is he's comfortable in play action. He's comfortable when your team is ahead and at Oregon State playing under center a lot, but can he bring you back when they're behind or in a tight game when you need those drop back situations to, you know, when you need to be successful? So, you know, Florida State's got a lot to look at going into next Monday and playing Boston College, a game a lot of problems last year, right? But it's a long season. One loss in theory shouldn't kill your season, but I think between Georgia Tech's ascent now maybe into an ACC contention and Florida State kind of coming down from the pack after losing all that talent last year, we've got a very interesting storyline already in the ACC.
We absolutely do. And another really interesting storyline from the ACC on week zero, Dalton. SMU beating Nevada 29-24, man. They entered that game as 27.5-point favorites in that game. And they needed a last-minute touchdown from Preston Stone to win that game against Nevada. So, yes, the Georgia Tech upset was huge, top 10 team going down. But if SMU lost this game, and they almost did, that would have been way bigger of an upset. And honestly, looking at the point spread, 27.5-point favorites, that might have been the biggest upset of the entire season when you just look at the odds.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, I believe SMU was the 7th highest graded team in the country last year, and Nevada was our lowest graded team in the entire country last year. Now, they brought in a whole new coaching staff, right, yep, for the most part. It just wasn't supposed to go like that. And it felt to me early in the game like SMU kind of, I don't know if they took it for granted, just weren't ready to play. I know they were rotating Preston Stone and Kevin Jennings early in the game, even though it's pretty well established after the year he had last year that Stone is their quarterback. But it just looked like they weren't ready early, and then it just took them a long time to find their rhythm. But you lean into your star players, though, when it yep matters, right? You realize, okay, we're in a real football game now. It doesn't matter who's across from us. Preston Stone, RJ Maryland with a huge second half to really save the day. I think think they should be better going forward, but it is something to keep an eye on.
It absolutely is, man. So that would have been an unbelievable upset. It actually is funny enough. One of our social guys, who I love, Brandon Lee, who runs the PFF College Social, the very next morning, he scheduled it out. It wasn't his fault. But he scheduled out my sleeper teams in every conference. And my sleeper team in the ACC was the SMU Mustangs. I was like, oh boy, this doesn't look great right now after that kind of game. So fortunately, they won that game. I still like SMU to kind of figure it out. But man, they got to get rid of that two quarterback system, man. I hated the whole Preston Stone playing a couple series, Kevin Jennings coming in for a couple series. Like, dude, Preston Stone is a top 10 to 15 quarterback in the country. Let him be that for you. And yeah, he didn't start off great, but when it mattered, he made big time throw after big time throw, finished with over an 80 grade in that game from PFF. So yeah, man, that was shocking. That to me was way more shocking than the Georgia Tech upset.
I agree. Look, we're going to see a lot from all three of those teams we just mentioned, and we've got some huge stories moving forward into week one in the ACC. So it's going to be really, really interesting and a wide open race that at least we think it could be early on.
And so, okay, so we'll start off with this. Florida State was going to be thought of as the favorite in the ACC. They were the highest ranked team. SMU was thought of as another favorite to maybe come out of the ACC. One of the other teams, Dalton, that is a favorite to come out of the ACC is that team right there over there. The Clemson Tigers going up against the Georgia Bulldogs. Number one Georgia against number 14 Clemson. Not a home game for Georgia, but it is in Atlanta. So it's kind of a home game for the Bulldogs. That is at noon Eastern time on ABC. And Dalton, really interesting storyline in this one is that we have a matchup of the only coaches in the country with multiple national championships. The guys right behind us right here, Kirby Smart and Dabo Sweeney, they're the only coaches that currently have multiple national titles. Kirby Smart obviously won two at Georgia recently, two in the last, 3 years. Dabo Sweeney won two, you know, a few years ago. And the only other coach in the country who has at least one national title to his name is the guy that we interviewed, Mack Brown, the current North Carolina head coach, who of course won his with Texas. But yeah, with Nick Saban retired, man, now, these two stand alone as the only coaches in the nation with multiple national titles.
Absolutely, but they have very different states of their programs right now, too. When you talk about, you know, Georgia's won two of the last three, right? And Dabo hasn't won one since, what, it's 2018 or 2020?
The Lawrence freshman year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 2018.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're talking about a little bit different state. You still feel like Georgia's squarely in the national title picture, whereas Clemson has kind of fallen off a little bit, right, especially offensively since Trevor Lawrence left. So, you're really getting into a territory here where it's like Clemson is kind of verging on that line. Like, ACC contention is great and playoff contention is great, but they expect to win national titles.
Absolutely. Yeah, Clemson, you mentioned it, Georgia's number one in the country. Clemson right now, number 14. This is their lowest preseason ranking in a decade, man. So it has been a long time since Clemson started the year this low in a preseason ranking after losing four games last year. So let's get into the matchups to watch, Dalton. And you had the Clemson offense against the Georgia defense in this game. What are you looking forward to on that side of the ball?
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting when you go back and look, Clemson started 4-4 last year and they had a lot of offensive struggles. But when you really watch them, you know, a lot of times I find like, oh, here's one schematic thing they need to do better. Here's one, you know, here's a couple of guys that need to play better, or a unit or something. They just need to just play better across the board. I know it sounds simple, but their offense ranked outside of the top 60 in every metric of grading that we had last season. Every single one, passing, offensive line, rushing, receiving, everything. Just as a unit, they just couldn't consistently put it together right. And I know they finished 9-4, but really good defense, really good turnover differential, didn't play a ton of elite offenses in the ACC. They just have to be better, right? And obviously, it starts with the quarterback. It starts with Cade Klubnik. So you're talking about a guy with a 63.9 passing grade last year, former five-star prospect. I know those are your favorite. 6.1 yards per attempt near the bottom of the country, only a 2.3% big-time throw rate. And honestly, a lot of I think it was 19 turnover-worthy plays to 11 big-time throws. And you're talking about a guy, well, people go, well, at least he doesn't throw a lot of interceptions, but he had 8 balls that were dropped interceptions, and that was the second most in the Power 5. So you're really talking about him getting away with a lot of mistakes, but their offense didn't. When you watch Clemson, they have a lot of plays where it feels like, okay, 10 guys execute their assignment, and then one doesn't. And that's the one guy that the play. It could be Klubnik missing a throw. It could be a drop outside. It could be a guard blowing a blitz pickup. It could be anything. It was really, you can't pinpoint one thing with this Clemson offense, right? And you can't have that lack of execution when you're playing a team as good as Georgia, a Kirby Smart defense, right? They were still the 13th highest graded defense in the country last year. even though their pass rush wasn't as great as it usually is, but it's still an elite defense with elite players, right? Malachi Starks, Mykel Williams, Jaylen Walker. At all three levels, you're just talking about a team that, you know, you have to play perfect football against to beat them, right? You saw it with Alabama when they beat them in the SEC title game. Clemson just needs to execute better, right? Obviously, they didn't add a whole lot in the portal. They don't add anything in the portal. So talent acquisition isn't necessarily their forte when it comes to the transfer portal. Right now, they just have to come in here and play better football. I wish I could give you another, like, big schematic, like, thing, but they just have to take their talent and execute better.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And really, the offense is what held them back last year, right? Because the Clemson defense, and I'll get into it right now, Clemson defense is still pretty damn good, right? And my biggest matchup I'm looking forward to, it's one that's going to decide a lot of this game, but also it's just one that it's like, man, I cannot wait to watch these guys go at it. The Georgia offensive line against the Clemson defensive line. In my opinion, Georgia had the number two offensive line in the country heading into the season, and Clemson's defensive line is number nine in the country in my ranking as well. That whole matchup of tackles to other tackle and guards and centers, they're all great. I'm excited for that matchup. But the one I'm really excited about, man, is the guards for Georgia, Dylan Fairchild and Tate Ratledge, two of the best guards in America, especially pass protection-wise, going up against Peter Woods, who was absolutely stellar as a true freshman last year. He had an 87.6 PFF grade in 2023. That was the third best we've ever seen by a true freshman defensive tackle. And Dalton, the only two that were above him were Dexter Lawrence and Ed Oliver, who, according to our rankings, are two of the top 25 defensive tackles in the NFL right now. Both of them make upwards of $15 million a year as well. So I can't wait, man, to watch Ratledge and Fairchild try to handle this star sophomore for Clemson right now, man. So I'm really excited for this matchup, and I think that right now Clemson is going to be in a really interesting spot, man, with Peter Woods as the superstar sophomore, I think our sixth best defensive tackle in college football entering the year. And, man, he has all the makings of the next star D-tackle in college football and the next star D-tackle maybe in the NFL draft. I know you put out an article recently, Dalton, on the 2026 NFL draft, the guys to know in that class, and Peter Woods is certainly one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Him, we had some spectacular true freshmen, especially on defense last year, and he was one of the best ones. You talk about especially the way he plays the run. Some people will go, well, why do you take a guy who I believe he didn't have a sack last year, 20-something pressures? Well, he's as good a run defender as any player in the country. Honestly, he was their best last year. On the run defense alone, he was in the top 10 in overall grading last season. So you really, I mean, you talk about a guy who's an impact piece and really sets the whole tone for their front seven, right? Clemson, they're going to win games on defense. That's how it works. But it always starts up front, and Peter Woods is a foundation piece for that.
He absolutely is, man. And pass rush win rate for him was very high as well. And going against Tate Ratledge and Dylan Fairchild last year, they were two of the top four guards in the Power Five in pass blocking grade. So I'm excited for that, man. And people probably know Tate Ratledge already from the college football video game. Ratledge is one of the 10 highest rated players in the college football video game, right? So I'm excited for that matchup between Ratledge, Fairchild against Peter Woods. That's really the big heavyweight matchup I'm looking forward to in this game. All right, Dawn, who is winning this game? Can Clemson pull off the colossal upset in Atlanta, or will Georgia show us why they're the number one team in the country right now?
I think Georgia is going to show us why they're the best team in the country, or at least the number one ranked team in the country, right? And Clemson, to me, look, you have to execute almost perfectly offensively to beat a Kirby Smart defense, to beat this Georgia defense. And Clemson just doesn't always do that. On top of the fact that against the Blitz last year, Max, they were 95th in the country in offensive grade as a team. And Georgia throws, especially in obvious passing situations, they throw a ton of different looks at you, a ton of different blitzes, stunts, simulated pressures, every type of coverage you can think of. On top of all the talent they have, they can just beat you one-on-one. So I don't expect it to be like a couple of years ago when these two played and it was 10-3.
Yeah.
Because I do think at least Georgia's offense is better than it was then. I believe it's a really good argument that Carson Beck is the best quarterback in the country. Mm-hmm. And I just think his ability to play it safe with the football, make the right decisions, and get rid of it quickly through what is a really good Clemson defense. Still, Clemson's defense can keep them in this game, but I just question their ability to score enough points. I think eventually it gets away from them. I'm going to take Georgia 27-10.
I'm going to be a little bit closer. I have Georgia winning this game 31-20. I mentioned before, Carson Beck is the best quarterback in America. I think he'll ultimately lead the Bulldogs to a victory in this game, but I do think, like you mentioned, that Clemson defense will put up enough of a fight in the first half, especially, I think, for this to be an interesting interesting one. For us to go into halftime, be like, oh, wait a minute. Can Clemson pull this off? And then I think Georgia will pull away in the second half with Carson Beck making enough throws at the end to ultimately win this game. But I do think 31-20 is my final score. I do think Clemson will keep it relatively close in this game. Next one we're talking about, Dawn, is my favorite school growing up. The number 8 Penn State Nittany Lions at the West Virginia Mountaineers. This game is at noon Eastern time on Fox. And really, the storyline for this game, for me at least, these are two teams looking to prove something, right? Because James Franklin entering his 12th season as a head coach. And speaking of 12, college football playoff expanding to 12 teams this year. He's expected to at least bring the Nittany Lions to that field, right? And if not, then his seat might start getting a little bit warmer. I'm not personally one of the Penn State fans who thinks that James Franklin should be on the hot seat, but there are plenty that do think that, man. And if you lose this game in West Virginia week one, that's when you get even hotter, right? And then the other side of the ball, you got West Virginia, who's coming off its best season in 7 years, but they weren't ranked in the preseason AP poll, even though they brought back a boatload of talent that you get into in just a second from that team. They were number 25 in our initial preseason ranking, man, but I really think these are two teams really looking to prove something. Penn State looking to prove, hey, we are a playoff contender this year, and West Virginia looking to prove, hey, we should be in the top 25 right now.
Yeah, and honestly, I think for West Virginia as well, proving after winning 9 games last year that they're in Big 12 contention, not just playoff contention or getting ranked. Big 12 contention, I mean, they were darn near, especially offensively, as good as any team in the Big 12 last year, right, outside of Texas. They've looked, I think, very much like Georgia Tech. You've got a three-headed rushing monster in Garrett Green and Jaheim White and C.J. Donaldson, right? You've got a defense that added some transfer guys that they're getting better, especially in the secondary. Got to fix the front seven a little bit, but even a guy like T.J. Jackson from Troy should really help them up front. I think West Virginia, and we were seeing win totals on them not that long ago at, what, 6.5?
Yeah.
For a team that went 9-4 last year and dominated North Carolina in their bowl game. And just, I mean, it's another team that really started to ascend in the second half of last season. And I think when you're talking about these two teams, they both have very high expectations. And honestly, when you look at a playoff race down the line, I know it's week one, it's very early in the season, but this could be one of the most consequential out-of-conference games when it comes to the playoff race, right? I know we have Texas, Michigan coming next week. We have some other ones coming down the pipe, but this is huge. I mean, this is a huge game when you talk about, especially for Penn State. If Penn State were to go down in this game, now we look at them, one, a lot different in the Big Ten race of like, okay, where are they at right now? And because they have this issue of like, okay, it's Ohio State, it's Michigan, now it's Oregon as well.
Yep.
And there's people think kind of there's this big thick line, right, between those teams. And then there's Penn State, and then there's everybody else. Like you said, you got two teams trying to prove something, and we'll see if they can do it in Morgantown.
Absolutely. So this West Virginia offense, Dawn, has been keeping me up at night. I've been laying awake at 3 o'clock in the morning thinking, okay, how is Penn State going to defend Garrett Green, Jaheim White, C.J. Donaldson, all the playmakers, West Virginia, Wyatt Milam, too. You know, PFF darling, a left tackle, excellent left tackle for West Virginia. So what is the matchup for West Virginia when they have the ball in this game?
So what West Virginia can lean back on from last year's matchup, okay, is they were able to run the ball. They ran the ball well. And Jaheim White actually was the first game of the year as a true freshman, didn't actually play. It was really just Green and Donaldson running the ball. And the only team that ran for more yards on Penn State last year was Michigan. So when you're talking about being able to compete with Penn State, they have an elite front seven every single year, right? They want to run the ball. They want to get to their play action game, okay? So the one thing I'm looking for is, where can West Virginia create more explosive plays? Because when you talk about Garrett Green, he throws down the field, right? He's led the country in big-time throw rate. They want to get over the top, and then they want to create explosive runs with their speed. They only had 3 plays in the game last year of 20-plus yards between these two teams, right? And that's just not how West Virginia operates. They don't usually slowly manufacture offense. They create explosive plays off play action. They have a lot of speed. Garrett Green's feet create a ton of plays for him. But it's hard to do against this Penn State front seven, guys like Abdul Carter, who are really, really athletic. The other thing I'm looking at is West Virginia, that was a very clear theme in this game, especially in all of last year, struggling to beat man coverage, okay? Mm-hmm. And what you're talking about here is just they need receivers to step up. They need, I don't know if it's Hudson Clement, if it's Preston Fox, if it's transfer Jaden Bray. They need guys who can step up because they really struggled all the way around against man coverage. And even Garrett Green's passing numbers were way better against zone than man. You saw when Penn State went into press man and even a blitz look last year in this game, West Virginia just had nothing in their passing game. Nothing. It just shut down. Zone, a little bit better. That's what Garrett Green can see, anticipates. He throws into windows well. But they need people who can separate against press coverage. Or if I'm Penn State, I would send blitzes all night. I would send blitz and press cover one and all of that stuff all night. Just keep challenging these receivers. Either one of two things will happen then. Either somebody on the outside is going to win for West Virginia, or they have to rely solely on the running game in the same fashion almost that Georgia Tech did against Florida State the other day. And even then, Haynes King had to make about four or five clutch throws, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a problem more so than the front. I think West Virginia, they've got a ton of experience on their offensive line. You mentioned Wyatt Milam. I think they can pass protect in this game. But can the receivers separate? Right from and you know, who knows? We don't know what Tom Allen yet is going to bring. That Manny Diaz maybe brought differently last year, but I can guarantee you they're going to look at last year's tape and go, we can cover these guys one on one. Let's put the heat on Green. Let's make him throw through man coverage and see who can get open.
This, it reminds me, Manny Diaz is gone now, right? Manny Diaz is now a Duke head coach, but like, that's the defense he ran, right? He blitzed basically more than anyone else in college football. So Tom Allen, the new Penn State defensive coordinator coming in, formerly the Indiana head coach, I'm excited to see if he can do that as well. So I think that's a really interesting matchup, is that Penn State, yeah, I'm with you, man. Just get after Garrett Green. I will say, though, Garrett Green last year had the lowest pressure-to-sack conversion rate in college football. He did an excellent job. Whenever he was pressured, he did not get sacked, man. He got rid of that football, or he got out of there and made a play with his legs, which he often did.
He's normally going to run when he's pressured. If you send those looks, and it's fine. Look, mobile quarterbacks running against man coverage, I'm all for it. We see Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson and those guys, even Patrick Mahomes, do it all the time. They get a man coverage look, and they just want to take off and run. Cool, because everybody's back's turned. Green, in the past, has shown that he's going to run. I do question if he is going to throw through the blitz a little bit more and if anybody can get open in those scenarios.
Absolutely. So my matchup I'm looking for is really just a generic Penn State one. It's, will this arrival of the, we mentioned before, Tom Allen, new D coordinator for Penn State. They also have a new offensive coordinator, and Andy Koldenicki coming in from Kansas. Will he be enough to fix the supporting cast for Drew Aller? Because you and I have been preaching this from the rooftops, man. Drew Aller was not the problem with Penn State's offense last year, no matter what people want to lead you to believe, man. A lot of the blame was put on his shoulders. He had an 86.3 PFF grade last year, top 20 mark in the nation, rarely put the ball in harm's way. Now, I will say, one of the reasons why his turnover-worthy play rate was so low is also because they never threw the ball downfield. He had the second lowest deep pass attempt rate in college football, which is horrible considering this guy, even in that West Virginia game last year, he made a throw, like a sidearm throw, like 40 yards downfield, right in the money. And it's like, dude, this guy has an NFL arm, and you're not throwing the ball downfield. It's as if I was playing quarterback, man. I can only throw the ball 20 yards downfield, right? So that's a big reason why they fired Mike Yurcich in November of last season, before it was even over. And you look at the grading, man. Penn State last year was 81st in receiving grade and 58th in pass blocking grade, even with three NFL offensive linemen on that offensive line, man. You look at what Andy Koldenicki did, though, and why I'm a little bit optimistic about this offense this year. They really schemed open a lot. Kansas didn't overwhelm teams with talent, but they still had the fifth best offense in terms of EPA per play in the country, and only LSU, Oregon, and Georgia had higher EPA per play marks than Kansas. LSU, Oregon, and Georgia all had absolute freaking superstars. Carson Beck, Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels. Those are the quarterbacks of those teams. I'm not saying Jalen Daniels is not a great quarterback, but he barely even played last year, right? Our guy Jason Bean was playing for most of those snaps, but they were really efficient, man. And also, Kansas, third best receiving grade in the country, only behind Washington and Oregon. Don, can you name a single Kansas receiver from last year, like off the top of your head, man?
Is it last year they had the tight end Fairchild?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, we're not talking about Troy Franklin or Roma Dunes.
I think what you're getting at too is the Penn State should have a similar basis Kansas did when it comes to running the ball, right? Yeah. And obviously Jalen Daniels and Jason Beeden played a big part in that, but Devin Neal's an elite back. You know, a lot of, obviously, Nick Singleton and Catron Allen are two of the better backs in the country. So, and I think what you get that I really liked with Koldenicki and Kansas's offense is They used Jalen Daniels had a cannon too. Jason Bean had a cannon too. They use every square inch of depth and width on the field, right? Yep. They're not just boxed in. Like, you're not going to see Penn State now go back to an I formation and just box themselves in,
yep.
you know, in the way that some teams
which
do.
They did so often, man.
Right.
Last year.
You're not going to see that. Kotelnicki loves using the entire field, the entire, all 53 yards, and as far as his quarterback can throw it, especially down the middle of the field. That's something I noticed no matter who his quarterback was. So if you've got a rifle like Drew Allard does, I think Kotelnicki is going to find ways to create shots for him down the field.
Absolutely, and that's important, man, because if you just look at what they have on the depth chart right now, you would still be pessimistic, right? They lose Olufashinu, they lose two other NFL offensive linemen. You lose your top two wide receivers in Keandre Lambert-Smith, who went to Auburn, and Dante Cephas, who went to Kansas State to the transfer portal as well. So you look at that, and they bring in Julian Fleming, who I'm a little excited by, but we'll see. It's what, year five now for Julian Fleming, I believe. So we'll see what he can do as a former top five overall recruit. But the supporting cast, just purely on paper, looks the same, if not worse, than last year. But the reason why I'm a little optimistic is because of Kotelnicki and because of how innovative he was as an offensive coordinator. And because Kansas really punched above their weight class offensively, I'm hoping he could do the same thing with Drew Aller and Penn State. And we'll see. I mean, West Virginia's got a pretty good secondary, man. Guys like Aubrey Burks we're a big fan of. Garnet Hollis Jr. we're a big fan of as well. So they have players in that secondary that could give Penn State issues, especially with those receivers. But I'm looking forward most to seeing how Kotelnicki does in this game against West Virginia.
No, absolutely. And it's a team that he didn't get to see last year. So it's even new if you think, oh, Kansas maybe played Westfall last year. They didn't. So it's not familiar territory for them. But you're right. Westfall's secondary can absolutely keep them in this game. And we'll see how they play in the trenches against Penn State's run game.
Absolutely. So Dalton, are you gonna break my heart right now and pick West Virginia to win this game, or do you think my Nittany Lions start off the season 1-0?
I will tell you, this was the hardest game of the five for me to pick. There's a lot of variables. West Virginia, look, last year when Garrett Green played in this game, it was his third career start. Jaheim White did not play in this game. It was his first career college game as a true freshman. There's a lot of variables. Andy Kotelnicki is a huge variable in this game and what he's done with Drew Aller and this offense. It just came down to me. I think Garrett Green, I have to see him manufacture more often and hit some of the easy throws. His high-end throws are as good as any player in the country. Yep. Like, he can just do things that a lot of other quarterbacks can't do. But it's the down-to-down consistency, right? Sometimes just taking and hitting that six-yard throw that keeps you on schedule, because Penn State just doesn't give up explosive plays. And I don't think West Virginia is going to find a whole lot more. I think if there's one thing Penn State is going to do is make them manufacture offense. I think it's going to be a really tight game. Do I think it's possible? Here's what I do think. If West Virginia were to win this game, Garrett Green is going to find himself on NFL radars
yep.
immediately for beating a defense like that. I do have Penn State winning 27-23. I think West Virginia's offense has to be almost perfect, because it's still an excellent front seven, right? Abdul Carter, Denai Dennis Sutton. They've got great linebackers. You've got Kevin Winston on the yep. back end, right? I still feel like Penn State's defense has enough in them just to slide by in this game. I think it's going to be a lot tighter than it was last year. And it was tight last year through the first two and a half, three quarters, and then Penn State pulled away their defense. You know, West Virginia just didn't find enough answers, and they weren't the team in week one last year that they were in the end of the season, which is why I think this game will be a lot closer. But Penn State's defense just has them escaping with a win in Morgantown.
I'm with you. I have 30-24 Penn State winning this game. I think what's going to happen is West Virginia's going to come off offensively. Penn State's going to be like, what's going on right now? Right? They're going to be a little thrown off by that. They give them a scare early, going to halftime, maybe even up at halftime. Then I think the Penn State defense settles in. I think Kotelnicki draw some better things up in the second half, and Penn State pulls away for the victory. But I think it'll take some time. I think Kotelnicki and Aller take some time to get in rhythm, and then once the second half gets going, then we start to see the offense open up a little bit. So I got Penn State winning a very close one, but I'm with you, man. I think this is a razor thin game, and I know it's a top 10 team in the country against an unranked team. I would not be surprised at all.
We saw it once.
We've already seen
it once. It's not new. It's already not new. It's a new season, but it's already not a new concept.
And because you nailed that one, I'm so grateful that you did not pick West Virginia to win this game, because I would have been very nervous.
It's the one of these five I'm the most worried about, if that helps your calmness there.
That's the opposite. It makes me feel way worse about
okay,
it, honestly.
Yeah, it's entirely possible for Westfall to win that game, for sure.
Very fair. So one that we're going to move on to now, the 3:30 game that we're talking about in this one, is number 19 Miami against Florida, at Florida, in the Swamp, 3:30 p.m. Eastern time on ABC. And Dalton, the big storyline of this game is that these are two coaches right behind us right here. They need this win badly. Badly, man. Both these coaches are kind of entering their third seasons at their respective programs on the hot seat. Mario Cristobal has a 12-13 record at Miami, the worst two-season stretch for the Hurricanes in 15 years. Billy Napier is 11-14 in his first 2 years at Florida. That's Florida's worst two-year stretch since the 1970s, man. So both these guys are entering year three on the hot seat right now. Miami's in a better spot, right? Miami's got an elite portal class coming in. I picked them to win the ACC. You picked them to make the college football playoff. Florida's not really in that boat because they're desperate to find any win they can come by. I think Florida's a good team. I think Florida's a top 30, 35 team in the country. The problem is, though, they play 8 of the top 20 teams in America, including Miami, man. So if you win all the other games, which, by the way, they play UCF and Kentucky as well. Those are not gimme games either. So Florida really is like, we got to win any game we can at this point right now, even though it's week one of the season. These are two coaches, man, who desperately, desperately need this win to take some of the pressure off their shoulders.
Absolutely. I mean, it's why it's maybe the most fascinating game of the week, right, is because you've got these two just combustible situations with Miami, all the talent they brought in, and the way their season went last year with obviously the loss to Georgia Tech and the coaching blunders and all that, not taking a knee. And then Florida, I believe they've had three straight losing seasons for the first time in almost 80 years. So you're talking about two teams, two coaches. Are these the two hottest seats in the country right now?
It's got to be up there. There's some other ones where it's like some other coaches, but yeah, these are two of the five probably.
I mean, you just talk about two programs that they always have high expectations, right? They've had them for years and years and years, but I think this is an interesting one, especially with it being in the Swamp, right? And all the pressure. I look at Miami especially, and I go, all this talent you brought in, it feels like we're doing the same thing with Miami as we did for Texas for years, right? Where it's like, oh, Miami's back, and every time we think they're back, then they're not back, right? Is this final? Texas finally got off the schneid last year. Okay, Texas is back. Like, they're here to stay. Mm-hmm. College football playoff contention, all that stuff, great. Is Miami back? Are we back to being the U, right? Are we back with all this talent and Cam Ward and Damian Martinez and every player and their mother that they brought in there, right? It's just they have to put it together, though. And that's the fascinating part, is to now go into the Swamp, in-state rival, and now if you're talking college football playoff, the stakes for all these non-conference games are even higher now, right? Because you're talking about building the resume if you do need to be an at-large.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dalton, every time I've told someone, they're like, oh, who do you have winning the ACC this year? I'm like, I got Miami. And they go, okay, I'm kind of with you because Miami's got the most talented roster. And they always say, but the reason why I'm not picking them is because of Mario Cristobal. So even more pressure is on Cristobal now because, like, man, you got the talent. You got the roster to win the ACC, to make the college football playoff. Now it's a question of, is Mario Cristobal the guy that Miami can lean on to win? And let's give Cristobal some credit, man. At Oregon, he had 10-win seasons, right, with Justin Herbert at quarterback. So I think he is a better coach than people are giving him credit for. Obviously, that Georgia Tech blunder was horrible.
And it was a theme through last season. Look, they were 7-6, but I believe they were our 12th highest graded team in the country, right?
Yeah.
They had talent. They have players that play well, and guys like Restrepo and Ruben Bain and all these guys that we'll talk about all year. But it comes down to coaching and, honestly, situational football. I mean, the Georgia Tech thing, obviously, turnovers in spurts that'll hurt them. Last year, like with Tyler Van Dyke, like, those are the things that can lose even talented teams. Last year, they probably had the talent even last year of a 9 or 10-win team, and they should be even better than that this year.
Absolutely. So, Dalton, what is the matchup to watch when Cam Ward, Miami's new quarterback, is going up against this Florida defense?
It starts with Cam Ward. So I think we need, like, the full primer before this first game of Cam Ward and what he is and what he isn't, okay? Cam Ward is a guy that when he's in rhythm and he gets rid of the ball on time, and even he can even throw the ball vertically and make quick decisions on his first read. Last year, on throws under 2.5 seconds, he had the second-best passing grade in the country behind Bo Nix.
Wow.
Okay, so he needs to stay. You know, he's not Michael Vick. He's not one of these dual threats. He can run. He's an athletic passer for sure. He can take off and run and scramble and do those things. But what he really is a rhythm passer and a guy who can work downfield even when his guys get open quickly. What happens with Cam is that late in the play, decision making just drops off, right? When you get beyond that 2.5 second mark, you're talking about a 53.1 passing grade, 15 turnover worthy plays in those situations last year, Max, and he's got 46 fumbles across 4 years in his career. You see fumbles, you see throws back across his body, you see throws into tight windows, and sometimes you just see things that kind of frustrate you when you're watching him, because you see so much good when he's in rhythm and he makes great throws and he looks like an NFL quarterback. And then there's times when he's trying to improvise. He's not an improviser. I think if there's – now, is he more of an improviser than Tyler Van Dyke? Yeah, Tyler Van Dyke was a statue. I'll admit that. He was a 1980s classic statue drop-back quarterback that wasn't going anywhere. Cam Ward can move more than that. The scrambling ability – is certainly better than a guy like Tyler Van Dyke, but he has to make better decisions. Like, the turnovers will kill him. Max, in his career, 71 big-time throws and 79 turnover-worthy plays. Now, obviously, you know, it's 2 years at Incarnate Word, 2 years at Washington State, where he didn't always have the best supporting cast and the best pass protection, right? It's a lot better now at Miami. So what comes from Cam Ward individually is decision-making and just field awareness and knowing when to play for the next down. Now, on the flip side, Florida Gators secondary really struggled last year. Yeah. They were actually the only team in the SEC with a worse coverage grade was Vanderbilt. So when you're down in the categories with Vandy in the SEC, you've got a problem. And they had the same issue of, like, the quick game, and when they see things, it kind of works the other way. First read, and they see it right away, and they can just come up and make tackles. It's okay. It's, again, when plays get extended and when receivers get deeper into their routes, right? Florida, when they get past 2.5 seconds in coverage, they are basically in the bottom five of every coverage metric. Like, it's a struggle, and it was so – they have talented guys, too. They have Jordan Castell. They have Jason Marshall. They have – Florida always has defensive backs. They've always had a good secondary. Just too many mental lapses. Like, there's times when they're in a certain coverage and the leverage is just off, right? And they're given the wrong release. Or there's times when they don't pass guys off between zones and things like that. Is it just, you just see more mental errors. Like, athletically, they can compete in the SEC and they should be able to, right? And I know there's some, you know, like last year, there's some teams that are harder to cover than others when you talk about they play LSU. Well, LSU put up points on everybody. But you just see too many times mental lapses. And you can't have mental lapses late in the play. So when this game gets crazy and it gets, and the pressure is on both sides and it's high intensity and the crowd is loud and all of that stuff, who's going to stay in it mentally? Is it going to be Cam Ward? Is he going to find Xavier Restrepo? Is he going to throw the ball away? Is he going to maybe take a sack without fumbling? Or is it going to be the Gators where, you know, are we going to, okay, somebody snuck behind us and we're giving up a 70-yard touchdown? Or just these mental errors on both sides are so fascinating to me, because it feels like we're going to watch this game on Saturday, and every play that goes beyond 3 seconds, I'm going to be just cringing on both sides, because I have no idea. It's that part that I have no idea what's going to happen on either side of the ball.
So just for reference, Dalton and I, after the Saturday games, or actually during the Saturday night games, after the Georgia Tech and Florida State game, we came into the office, watched the game in PFF offices, had a great time doing that. Came back, we actually went to your apartment, and we were watching the rest of the games, and then we actually turned on the tape to work on this preview. And I remember, Dalton, you're at your desk, and you're watching Cam Ward 2.5-plus second plays. And the amount of times you're like, what the hell were you doing out there? And then what you did after that, you went to Florida 2.5-plus seconds. And I heard the same exact phrase over and over, man. So I'm excited.
It's frustrating, because they're both more talented than that. And so much, especially playing quarterback and even in coverage, when you talk about having to communicate things, it's about decision making. And those two things were not always the best, especially it's under pressure, right? Like, can we just make Cam Ward hold the ball and just wait for him to do something wild? Because it's in there, right? It's the part that worries me the most for Miami in this game is the turnover battle. Because if there's one thing, and you're about to get to it, that Graham Mertz doesn't do, he doesn't turn the ball over.
Yep.
You know, he might not give you the highest ceiling of any guy in the country, but he doesn't turn the ball over. I have serious questions. Those are going to be the plays when things break down. Is Cam Ward going to turn the ball over? Or is the Gators secondary going to give up the touchdowns and Miami pulls away?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I just thought it was so funny listening. I wasn't even watching it with you because I was working on my own stuff, and you listening to you go through that was so funny to me, man. So I'm excited for that matchup.
It's a roller coaster.
it's be like, we're going to be tripping on acid watching that, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. That would be pretty funny. Florida, though, I think offensively, they got talent, man. They got talent. Graham Mertz mentioned before. He's a top five quarterback prospect in the draft, according to our lead draft analyst, Trevor Sikkema. Their offensive line, which we'll get into in just a second, is very strong as well. Top 10 offensive line in the country for me. Good receiving core. I like Eugene Wilson. I like some of the other weapons they have there. Montrell Johnson. Now Trevor Etienne's gone. He's at Georgia now, the team we just talked about. But Montrell Johnson is still a pretty damn good running back as well, right? What I'm really looking forward to in this game is the same thing as Clemson, Georgia. Florida's offensive line against Miami's defensive line. Last year, Florida had the eighth highest graded offensive line in the Power Five, and they returned three starters to that unit, including one of the nation's best centers in Jake Slaughter. However, their best defensive line that they're going to play all year is in week one against Miami right now. Miami, number three defensive line in the country, in my opinion, only behind Ohio State and Michigan, two teams that Florida will not be playing unless they make the College Football Playoff somehow. And all of a sudden, Billy Napier gets a lifetime contract if he does that,
He would win Coach of the Year if he took this team with this schedule to the playoffs.
He absolutely would. But Miami, man, that defensive line, number three in the country, deepest edge room in college football. That's why they're this good, man. Reuben Bain Jr., 89.3 pass rushing grade in 2023 as a true freshman. That is the second best we've ever seen by a Power 5 true freshman. Number one, Miles freaking Garrett, the reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year in his freshman year at Texas A&M. Opposite of him is Tyler Barron, who finally settled on a school after committing to God knows how many in the transfer portal this past offseason. Former Tennessee edge Tyler Barron, sixth among SEC edges last year with 41 pressures. Elijah Alston, also transferring in from Marshall. He was the third highest graded edge rusher in college football last year with a 91.3 grade. So you got those three guys, and also Akeem Mezidor, who only played in two games last year due to a foot injury, but the year before had an 87.2 grade, which was fifth among all Power 5 edges, man. So your backups were some of the highest graded edges in the country when they were out there, man. So it was absolutely ludicrous, the depth and the star power Miami has in that edge room. And not only that, man, they got some good defensive tackles as well, and Simeon Barrow, CJ Clark, and Marley Cook too. So I like Florida's offensive line. I think it's a really solid unit. But this Miami defensive line, man, we mentioned how good they are offensively. This Miami defensive line is the best part of this team, and they're going to have to get after Graham Mertz because, like you mentioned, man, Graham Mertz is not going to put the ball in harm's way. And I think there's ever a weakness on Miami, it's that secondary. The secondary is solid. It's not terrible. It's solid. But I think that Florida receiving corps could take advantage of it a little bit if this Miami defensive line doesn't get enough pressure on Graham Mertz.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the pass rush on Mertz is going to be a big thing if you can get to him quickly, because he wants to get rid of the ball quickly. And there's not much improvisation, I should say, to Mertz's game. He's going to be in the pocket. You know where he's going to be. He doesn't move a whole lot. I think for Florida, it's always a thing, and in Billy Napier's offense, even at Louisiana, it was always a thing where they want to run the ball first. If they can get to running the ball, and against a defensive line like this, I would think about picking up the tempo. If we have success running the ball, pick up the tempo. Try to gas these guys out, especially down there. It's still blazing hot down there in Florida. Try to gas these guys out, because for me, if I had that many horses on a defensive line, I wouldn't blitz at all.
You don't need to.
I would only send four. You just don't have to, right? Even the interior rushers, they got just so many guys that you just mentioned that are especially really good pass rushers. So I think Florida has to have balance. They're going to want to get rid of the ball quickly anyway. It's what they do. The problem is if they get behind schedule, when they get in those third and eights and third and tens and they don't have time to just throw slants, or they have to work their way downfield, are they going to have enough time to do it, right? And it's a great matchup in the trenches that you've highlighted here, because it's going to be, I think we're going to talk about this in a lot of the Miami games that we do.
Yes.
It's going to be, we're going to feel like we're just saying the same things over and over.
Yep.
Where it's like, how in the world do you pass protect against this team with this much talent?
Yep.
And I know usually we're talking about SEC and Big Ten defensive lines and things like that. This defensive line has as much talent as any team in the country. And if you can't, I've been saying it's the unit to watch in the ACC, because there's enough talent there to take over games.
Yeah.
And if they take over this game, it's going to be a huge problem for the Gators.
It absolutely will be, man. So which of these coaches, Dawn, will get that coveted win over a rival that they so desperately need and start the season off 1-0? Will it be Mario Cristobal in Miami and start that journey to the ACC title? Or will Billy Napier kind of shock the world and make us all recalibrate our thoughts on Florida?
This is rough. I have to do a show with Trevor Sikkema the next 2 days. And yet I have to pick against his Florida Gators. Yep. I just think at the end of the day, I know Florida has a lot of talent, and in probably in a lot of other situations with an easier schedule, they would be better, at least have a better record. But I think Miami's the better team. And as long as Cam Ward stays out of those late play situations and throwing the ball into traffic and turning the ball over, if he doesn't turn the ball over, I like Miami in this game. 34-27, I have the Hurricanes. And I think the one guy to me that sticks out, the more that I watched the Gators in the secondary, they got a new defensive backs coach, which helps them, or it should help them. We'll find out on Saturday. Xavier Restrepo's a star. Yeah. I think he's going to be the best player on the field. I do. I think he is. He doesn't have the biggest traits. He's not a big guy. He's not a particularly fast guy. I would bet even he might just run a 4.5 when he goes out there to the combine next year. But I don't know that there's a receiver in the country with a higher football IQ than Xavier Restrepo. We've talked about this before. His understanding of routes and coverages and releases and all of that stuff. And he's one of the best. You're somebody who pointed this out to me. He's one of the best receivers in the country at the term, I guess, is making himself available in those late play situations. And I think if I'm Cam Ward, I just find him. Just find number seven. If you're rolling out somewhere, if you're breaking the pocket, find number seven. I think Restrepo will be the best player on the field in this game. I've got the Hurricanes by a touchdown.
That is exactly when we were watching that tape, man. I was like, dude, that is so valuable for Cam Ward. Because Cam Ward, you mentioned before, how he likes to bail out of there and just launch it somewhere. If he's got a wide open receiver, and Xavier Restrepo does an excellent job of coming back to the football and finding the football, then I think that's going to be really valuable for this offense. I'm with you. I actually think exactly Miami's going to win by touchdown just like you, but I have a 31-24 in this game. I think Miami in the trenches on both sides is going to win this game. Defensive line, and the Miami offensive line is really good too. And that Florida defensive line losing Princeton and Montmielen, that's a huge, huge loss, man. So I think Miami's going to win the trenches on both sides. And I think Cam Ward, Xavier Restrepo, the other Miami receivers that got there are also really good. They'll take advantage of a vulnerable Florida secondary that we just talked about before. So both of us have Miami winning by a touchdown in this game. Dawn, the big night game on Saturday. Number 7, Notre Dame at number 20, Texas A&M, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on ABC. The storyline for this one, man, writes itself. You got the two Duke leaders from last year going head-to-head in this game. So Duke's not playing in this game, but their presence is surely going to be felt, man, because you got Mike Elko taking over for Jimbo Fisher, who was fired in a record buyout last year. So Mike Elko is the new head coach for Texas A&M. He will be going up against the quarterback that he coached for 2 years at Duke in Riley Leonard, who transferred to Notre Dame. So you got the Duke head coach from last year on one side, the Duke quarterback from last year on the other side. I'm really excited, man, because if there's anyone in the country who knows how to defend Riley Leonard, it's the guy who freaking coached him for 2 years, man.
Absolutely, and there's a ton of pressure on both of these quarterbacks in both these situations. But Leonard's situation is so fascinating because it's really kind of the same thing we saw with Sam Hartman last year, right, in Notre Dame, where it's like, we're going to bring in an ACC quarterback. Is he going to be the guy that takes us over the top? Now, obviously, a little bit easier to do that in a 12-team playoff than a 4-teamer, but it's a very similar situation. Leonard's a really good athlete, former basketball player, can operate very well in the quick game. Last year was dealing with some injuries, especially through the second half of the year, and then eventually was just knocked out in the Florida State game. Of course, ironically, hurt his ankle at the very end of their loss to Notre Dame last year, because that's just how these things work. But no, I mean, he's got a lot of talent. He does. And you're talking about a guy who's also got a lot of pressure on him, right? Anytime you're Notre Dame's quarterback, it's going to be like that. But this year especially, Notre Dame has legitimate playoff expectations, and a lot, they're replacing a lot of other pieces on their offense.
They absolutely are, man. And they were number 6 in our ranking entering the year, so we even have them higher than number 7 in the AP poll right now, man. But he's not the only quarterback who's under the spotlight in this game, Dawn. Connor Wegman, who is the number 1 quarterback in the 2025 NFL draft, according to Trevor Sikkema, going up against his Notre Dame defense. What should we be looking out for in that matchup?
I just want to see how he returns from this injury. He only played, 3.5 games last year. He had broke his foot, and then it was out for the rest of the year. He showed us a lot of great stuff early in the year, albeit against softer opponents, and a solid game against Miami that Miami beat them. But what you look for in Wegman is, over the middle is kind of his sweet spot, right? He just loves ripping fastballs down the middle of the field. He's the ex-baseball player. Sometimes you can see the baseball player in his mechanics, and he just, you know, Trevor loves him because he throws over that intermediate middle of the field. There's not many quarterbacks, if any, that throw a 15-yard in route better than Connor Wegman. Like, there's just a certain sweet spot. Now, He started to show us some things outside the numbers last year, but the one question for me with Wegman is just facing this incredibly talented defense. They've got talented guys at all three levels, right? So I think for me, on with Texas A&M and Wegman and their offense, when you're attacking Notre Dame, they're going to test them in the slot, okay? And Notre Dame, out last year, they had Benjamin Morrison, who's an incredible player, and they had Cam Hart, who got drafted, right? When you try to throw outside to Notre Dame's outside corners, not happening.
Yep.
Just no way, no, lights out. You're not throwing to the outside. Fourth best outside corner grade in the country last year in coverage, okay? When you throw it, anybody lined up in the slot, their slot coverage grade was 66th. That's where you want to win, right? And you look at Texas A&M and the way their offense operates, and even last year when you talk about whether it's Wegman or it was Max Johnson, right? When they tried to throw to the outside, 37th in receiving grade, okay? To the slots, second best in the country.
Wow.
Second best receiving grade in the country throwing to the slot for Texas A&M. So that's the matchup I'm looking for, and a couple of new guys I'm looking for Notre Dame. They got a couple of transfers to try to fill this up. Jordan Clark from Arizona State and Rod Hurd from Northwestern. These are two guys I'm focusing on. I'm not sure which one's going to start in the slot. We'll probably see them both. I believe Hurd had the second most slot snaps in the country last year behind Sebastian Castro. He's really good.
Mm-hmm.
These are the two guys I'm looking at. And you know, another story for A&M, they lost Anaya Smith to the draft, too.
Right.
The Eagles drafted him, and he was the biggest part of that. So who wins that area in the middle of the field? Who wins that area in the slot? Because if a single target – any target that goes towards Ben Morrison, I need, like, a written explanation. Honestly, like, I'm like, this is not where we're trying to attack.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's also everything that goes into it, too, the pass protection with Cross and Mills in the middle and Jack Kaiser at linebacker and then Xavier Watts, the nation's leader in interceptions, sneaking back there. But that's where A&M is going to want to attack. That's a little bit last year where Notre Dame was at least softer, but this is a great defense. And you know what? If they fill that hole in the slot – I'm not exactly sure how you score on Notre Dame.
I don't either, Megs. I really like Rod Hurd. That's a huge pickup for Notre Dame in the transfer portal. So I think that was a great pickup. And, yeah, it's been interesting, man. My matchup on the other side of the ball is obviously Notre Dame offensively against Texas A&M's defense. And it's the same thing we just talked about at the Open. What does Mike Elko do to throw off Riley Leonard? Because I mentioned before, coach him for 2 years, and Mike Elko comes from a defensive background as well. So he comes from a defensive mind, and he knows, hey, I've seen this in practice for 2 years. I know how to defend this guy. So Riley Leonard, really the breakdown of him, his best attribute is his mobility. He has an 87.2 rushing grade over the last 2 years. That's tied for fourth among Power 5 quarterbacks. 1,164 rushing yards in that span is eighth. Keep in mind, he missed some time with injuries as well. So really good rusher. I think Mike Elko, what he might do in this game, and I think what he would be smart to do in this game, have someone spy Riley Leonard all night. Torian York, a really good linebacker, sophomore linebacker they have. Just have him follow Riley Leonard. Maybe don't blitz him, just follow him, right? I think that'd be really smart. Other thing too, sit back in coverage, man. Riley Leonard, over the last 2 years, is 14th among 100 Power 5 quarterbacks against the blitz. 57th when there isn't a blitz. And you broke this down in your scouting report of him. 15 of his 20 big-time throws over the last 2 years have come against single coverage. So when he sees a one-on-one matchup, he's going to take it and sometimes make a really good throw out of it. So I think Texas A&M in this game, don't blitz, sit back, make Riley Leonard beat you with his arm, and don't let him beat you with his legs. And the Aggies have a really good defensive line, man, including Nick Scorton coming in, the number one edge in the 2025 NFL draft, according to Trevor Sikkema. And you look at Notre Dame's offensive line, Joe Alt is gone, Blake Fisher is gone, they lost another starter as well, and they just announced, we might have seen this in our true freshman video, Anthony Knapp starting as a true freshman at left freaking tackle, man. If I'm A&M, I am putting Scorton on that side of the field all night and saying, all right, kid, show me what you got against one of the best in the country. A&M does not have to blitz in this game. Send four, drop everyone else back, and have Torian York or one of your other speedy linebackers just spy Riley Leonard all night. If I'm Mike Elko, and of course he knows better than me as to what to do against Riley Leonard, but if I'm Mike Elko, just don't let him beat you with his legs
and make him throw downfield into heavy coverage, and I think A&M is a great shot in this game.
Yeah, and challenge some of these new Notre Dame receivers too, right?
Right.
Guys like Chris Mitchell, guys like Bo Collins, like see who they overhauled the receiver room too. But I think you make a great point too about scheming against Leonard. And last year, the guy for A&M, I'm curious to see who that spy would be, because last year was Edgerrin Cooper.
Right.
He was the guy.
That'd be the easy answer.
To me,
right?
he was the best spy in the country when you talk about
Jaden Daniels. He like shut him down almost.
Running down Daniels, yeah. Running down Milroe, like Edgerrin Cooper was that guy last year. If Torian York or somebody else can step into that role, fantastic. I mean, I'm with you. I think you make Riley Leonard beat you down the field, right?
Yep.
And I think it's going to be incumbent on Notre Dame, and really on both sides, to stay on schedule. How much – I'm curious to see, especially after the injury had last year, how involved is he in the design run game,
right?
And now with – well, new offensive coordinator too, Mike Denbrock, right?
Right.
So he's familiar. Riley Leonard I don't think is as good an athlete as Jaden Daniels, but he is a problem, right? We saw it even week one last year against Clemson, the long touchdown.
They
run
won really because of his legs in that game.
Yeah. I mean, so it's a similar problem. I'm curious what Denbrock will do with Leonard and the design run game. You mentioned Nick Skorton too. What an animal.
Yeah.
I mean, and to have a true freshman across from him, that's a dangerous proposition. This is going to be a fist fight.
And a new right tackle on the other side too.
Yeah. I mean, and a new center for that matter.
Yeah.
What is it? Because Zeke Correll, he left too.
Yeah.
He went to NC State, is it?
Yes. Yeah.
You're talking about usually Notre Dame is known for their offensive line play, but they've got a lot of new faces up there, and this is not the first defensive line you really want to be playing.
No, absolutely, man. So I think that's the way to do this. And honestly, man, and just take away Mitchell Evans as much as you can do. I think Riley Leonard's going to really rely on Mitchell Evans, one of the best tight ends in the country coming off that torn ACL. I think we had him as the second best tight end in college football. Take away him. Riley Leonard, like you mentioned before, loves to utilize a quick game as well. So just make him sit back there. Don't let him run. Make him sit back there, beat you deep. I think Texas A&M is a great shot in this game. Dawn, this is the one I personally struggled with the most, because I initially was going to pick Texas A&M, which I just gave away my pick right there. But, man, I am going back and forth even right now as to who I'm going to pick in this game. Who are you going with, though?
I'm going, and I know it's Kyle Field, too. I know it's the 12th man. It's such a big advantage down there, right? But I'm going with Notre Dame. I think in what's going to be just – it's a football version of a boxing match is what it's going to be with these two defenses. I think Notre Dame, though, has a top three defense in the country. I think it's a case where if Connor Wegman finds a way to win this game, even if it's some reasonably low-scoring game, like it probably will be. I believe the over-under right now is only like 46. Wegman will go way off the charts for as far as NFL draft prospects next year. But I think A&M has a good defense. I think Notre Dame has a top three defense.
Yeah.
I think their defense is the part that wins it for them. A&M still isn't an elite running team by any means, so they have to find a way to be physical, and they will on defense. I'm just not sure they'll do it on offense enough to crack through this Notre Dame defense. I've got Notre Dame 23-17.
I like that a lot, man. I would not be surprised if this game ends in the teens, honestly. I think both these defenses are going to come out to play. I got Notre Dame as well, 24-23. But I think it could be a defensive slugfest, man. I wouldn't be surprised if it's even more low scoring than that. You mentioned it, that Notre Dame defense, just talent-wise, is absolutely absurd. Marcus Freeman, an unbelievable defensive coach as well. And then A&M's defense, also really good. But the reason why I'm even higher on them in this game, at least, is because, again, Mike Elko against Riley Leonard. Like, he knows what to do against that guy. So I think it could be a very low-scoring game, but still a very, very exciting back-and-forth game at the same time. So we both got Notre Dame in this game, but I am going back-and-forth, man. And I don't necessarily agree with Texas A&M being favored, but I can at least somewhat understand why, right? The home environment, the Leonard against Elko. Like, I understand the thinking behind it, but I'm not there.
And it's just week one. I mean, we're going to see. We've already seen games where it's just like, oh, right, it's the first game of the year. We're just going to see some buffoonery, honestly. I mean, it's to have a week one game in that stadium of that magnitude is nuts.
And a lot of, I would say, more newness Notre Dame side than Texas A&M.
Yeah.
A&M's bringing guys back. You know, Nick Skorton's new, but a lot of new, especially offensively for Notre Dame, a lot of newness on that side of the ball. So that I at least understand that. But final game we're previewing, Dawn, is the Sunday night game that we got between number 13 LSU and number 23 USC. Sunday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on ABC. Again, this storyline writes itself, man. You're replacing the last two Heisman Trophy winners and the first two picks of the 2024 NFL draft. Caleb Williams is gone. Jaden Daniels is gone. James Daniels is gone as well. Now you got Miller Moss and you got Garrett Nussmeier, the new quarterbacks for these teams. So big shoes to fill for both of them. But I still think these offenses are going to be really good, man. So I'm excited to see these two replace two legendary quarterbacks in Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels.
Absolutely. I mean, and you have two teams that went through incredibly similar seasons last year when you talk about you had the great quarterbacks and you had the great offenses, but the defenses let us down in both cases, right? Neither team won as many games as they should have. You could argue they both had playoff caliber and national championship caliber offenses, right? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, we talked about LSU. Three losses, they gave up 142 points, right? And yeah. USC, you talked about their EPA per play. It seemed like every week last year, just towards the bottom of the barrel. I mean, these are teams you just – it's hard to win shootouts 50-40 every single week. And honestly, you've got the same thing coming into this year. Now, you're not going to score that many points on either side, we don't think at least, for USC or LSU, but – you still have to fix the problems on defense, and they're going about it in different ways. LSU bringing back a lot of guys other than at defensive tackle. USC bringing in a lot of new faces. So this is a weird one. This is absolutely a weird one when you talk about two guys each who only made one start last year at quarterback, two defenses that really struggled, kind of a lot of things in flux and a lot of draft picks. And, you know, this one could get wild. This could just be a wild Sunday night game, just that – maybe it is one of those games that we get it. Maybe it's our first game we get in the 50s this year. Who knows how high scoring it could be if these two defenses are still struggling. But they're two teams that went through very similar seasons last year, and I think going into this year kind of have a very similar feel to them as well.
Absolutely. So USC at least try to make a lot of acquisitions, you know, new coordinator, new players on defensive side of the ball. Will it be enough to stop this new look LSU offense though?
We're going to find out the hard way, right? But they did bring in a lot of talented guys, right? You've got new safety, Akili Arnold from Oregon State. Kamari Ramsey and John Humphrey come over with DeAnton Lynn, their new defensive coordinator from UCLA. Greedy Vance was a solid corner and an excellent Florida State secondary. Added some pieces up front too, Nate Clifton, Gavin Meyer. Like, they're just trying to collect talent because they did lose some talent too. You talk about Damani Jackson left. Yep. Kalen Bullock got drafted. Solomon Bird, their best pass rusher, got drafted. Like, the talented guys they did have, they got drafted, and they had to go out, and DeAnton Lynn had to go and pick some guys, some talented guys to fill in for them. So that's really what I'm looking for, is USC has this new wave of guys that you go, okay, can – and we saw DeAnton Lynn, first of all, at UCLA. What a huge turnaround he had.
Unbelievable.
There. They were outside the top 100 in defense a couple of years ago, and he turned them into an elite unit really quick. But they don't have as much talent, especially up front, as that UCLA team with Latu and the Murphy brothers. But I want to see how quickly he can turn this around. And as far as the LSU side of it, Nussmeier's experienced. He's been there for 3 years already. Looked really good in his one start against Wisconsin last year. And I like when you watch him year over year. His process in the pocket is a lot better than it used to be. Gets rid of the football quicker. There's quicker decisions. He can work to his second read. The one thing with Nussmeier is he's just not going to bring you, obviously, the feet. Like, the style of quarterback from Jaden Daniels is the exact opposite. He can throw a little bit, especially when rolling to his right, but 95% of the time he's going to win from the pocket. I think the one distinct advantage LSU does have is pass protection. You talk about especially at tackle with Will Campbell and Emory Jones. Mm-hmm. I mean, USC is going to have to find a pass rush in this game, because if Nussmeier's sitting back there clean and he's allowed to just make throws from the pocket with just unabated, there it's going to be a long night. They're going to be asking USC to put up 45, 50 points again, because they've got – LSU still has a lot of offensive talent, even though they lost three first-round picks.
They absolutely do, man. And I think USC still has a lot of offensive talent as well, and that's really – the other side of the ball is – can Miller-Moss take advantage of a vulnerable LSU defense, and specifically the secondary, man? Because last year, they were really bad in terms of coverage, man. 92nd in coverage grade last year. And defense and pass rush-wise, they lost Mason Smith and Makai Wingo, their top two defensive tackles from last year as well, and Toren Jefferson as well, right? So LSU did make some moves to help, namely hiring a new defensive coordinator in Blake Baker coming in from Missouri. But I'm not as high on this defense as I am on, say, a USC one, just because USC brings in a lot more talent from the portal. LSU didn't really do too much of that, really. And, yeah, I know Miller-Moss is really his first game as a starter in the season, at least. He started the bowl game, obviously, last year, but in a great game in that bowl game. It's a really good defense at Louisville, too. A lot better than this LSU one right now. And I think there's an opportunity here for Miller-Moss and Lincoln Riley to flex their muscles, man. Lincoln Riley has had a top 10 offense in terms of EPA per play in the Power 5 ever since he became the Oklahoma offensive coordinator in 2015, man. We're talking about like 9 seasons in a row of a top 10 offense, no matter who is playing quarterback for him. So I understand Caleb Williams has gone the number one overall pick, but man, every single year he finds a new one, right? Baker Mayfield, then you got Kyler Murray, then you go to Jalen Hurts, then you go to Spencer Rattler, then you go to Caleb Williams. Now you got Merlin Moss. I'm not going to say he's going to be an NFL quarterback like all of those other guys. Maybe he will be. But I will say Miller Moss is a guy that is going to play on time. Caleb Williams, it didn't really he freelanced, right? That's why he went number one overall in the draft. And what made him so special, what I think we'll see from this USC offense this year that we didn't see last year, is that this will be Lincoln Riley. This will be the Lincoln Riley show. This won't be the Caleb Williams show. This will be the Lincoln Riley show. This will be the exact offense he draws up. And I think Miller Moss, that's what he's going to do, is just run the play the way it was designed.
The what I love watching about Miller Moss is his process, his clear knowledge of how this system works. And it's just, it is, it's going to look different. It's in structure. He doesn't do a ton out of structure. He can move a little bit. But it's not, that's not his wheelhouse, right? He wants to run this system and run the plays as they're designed. Get to his first read, get to his second read, maybe find a check down, work that whole process from the pocket, and then figure it out from there. But he doesn't want to do it as often as Caleb did. He doesn't have the superpowers that Caleb did, right? But I honestly think that's why Moss is starting, though, because Lincoln Riley, and I know he's got what, Jaden Maiava, who came in there from UNLV, but Moss knows the system, and he seems, especially in that Louisville start, to know it very well, and he's fearless, man. I'm going to tell you right now, he had Ashton Gelati breathing down his neck in that game, and he was making throws through that. He was challenging Quincy Riley in single coverage. He didn't care.
Like, he had like 6 touchdown passes in that game, or 5 at least, or something like that.
I think it was 6, yeah.
6 and 0 picks, I think, right? Yeah.
He threw one pick to Riley on the goal
line. Right, I remember that, yeah.
Which, and even then, of like the 8 times or however many it was that he challenged a guy like Quincy Riley, he just kept firing. Yep. He just kept firing, and he comes back. And look, he doesn't have the biggest arm either. He doesn't have an arm like Caleb where he can throw it 65 yards off platform. Like, most of Miller Moss's best throws are going to be on time. They're going to be between like 25 and 35 yards. Like, you're not going to see tools and crazy stuff. What you're going to just see is efficiency and playing in structure. And I think you're going to see it from both these quarterbacks. These two teams are so identical. It's such a fascinating game because even the guys that they're losing at quarterback to the guys that they're going to, they're like the exact same. Yeah. They really are, and we're just going to find out in this game, like, okay, who's just better on this night, because the situations are so similar.
Dude, honestly, and I tweeted this out, and you mentioned it too, is like, usually there's a quarterback every year in the draft that comes out of nowhere. Zach Wilson, Kenny Pickett, Jaden Daniels last year. Who will be this year?
It could be either of these
Either of these guys, or both of them.
Either of them, because you can tell that Nussmeier is a coach's son, right? Doug Nussmeier. You can tell he's a coach's son. You can tell Moss has come up under Lincoln Riley the last 3 years and just learned how that system works and learned how coverages work and all that. You can tell the just what they've been taught and the pedigree in their play, even though they've only played a small sample. And I think that's why, honestly, we both have a lot of confidence in both of them to succeed, is because they just get it. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Nussmeier's got a better arm, I would say, than Moss does, but they both just understand the game.
And I understand Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. gone, and USC lost Taj Washington and some other guys too.
Oh, there's still weapons.
But, dude, Zachariah Branch, CJ Daniels, there's still Kyron Lacy, Deuce Robinson in USC.
I was going to get to Deuce Robinson. Ooh. Yeah, they're for USC, they're younger weapons for sure. And I think bringing in Woody Marks from Mississippi State helps
huge
a lot.
Yeah.
I think there is an element, for as much as we're going to talk about quarterbacks and these two guys are going to get talked about all night, who can run the ball? Right,
yep.
USC's run defense last year was awful, to say the least. And LSU, you know, you've got two teams also where it's like, we don't have quarterback run game anymore. So now we have to just hand it off and just win up front. Now, you have to like LSU's offensive line's chances that you have Campbell and Jones. You should be able to run the ball. But who is going to run the ball in this game? How much balance is it? There's so many like fascinating schematic things that could come out of this game. That I mean, it's wild, and there are two teams that it's a real tone setting game. It's like they're just so similar that you could argue by the end of the week it might be the most fascinating game of the whole week.
Also, LSU new offensive coordinator as well, right? Because Dan Brock is gone too, so I'm excited to see, you know, what Joe Sloan does as the new offensive coordinator. I think it's an internal promotion for them, but still, it's gonna be interesting to see what he could do in this game against Lincoln Riley, right? That's as tough as it gets for when you're going head to head with Lincoln Riley. That's tough as your first game as an OC, man. But Dawn, ultimately, LSU's favorite in this game, man. But who are you going with to win this Sunday night game?
I think in a matchup of very similar teams, I like what USC did in the portal, adding veterans to their defense. And LSU is pretty much just going in with the same group of guys they had last year and hoping it just gets better internally and improves internally, and they just play better than they did last year. I'm gonna take D'Anton Lynn and that crew to make enough stops. It's probably gonna be a high scoring game. It could be higher scoring than I have it. I have it USC 35 and LSU 27.
Okay.
I think we could see a lot more points than that. If this game got in the 40s both ways, I wouldn't be that shocked at all. But I think USC made the right hire for their defensive coordinator. I think Miller Moss is going to keep them out of trouble. I think both quarterbacks are going to play well. I really do. I just think I worry about that LSU secondary that you mentioned. I really do, because even with young weapons and Miller Moss in there, LSU made a lot of mistakes in the secondary last year. A similar problem that Florida had, right? But I think I like Lincoln Riley against a defense like that. And I know LSU's favorite, and I know they're the SEC team and this and that and the other thing. But Lincoln Riley, no matter who his quarterback is, he's going to put up points.
Yeah. And listen, Blake Baker coming in, he did a good job with Missouri secondary last year. But you look at the talent they brought in, it's kind of the same as last year, man. So it's like, did they really improve, honestly? So
and another thing we talk about a lot is how many times is Harold Perkins going to rush the passer?
Yeah.
Are we getting that? And the weird part is he led them in coverage grade last year by like a wide margin, which wasn't supposed to happen.
Like 10 points.
More
right?
Power to him adjusting to the position. But at what point do we go, okay, we just have to send him?
Yeah.
It's our one shot. So are we going to get the same story as last year with that too?
Yeah, exactly. I wrote an article about that after that Florida State LSU game. I was like, dude, rush it. Let him rush the passer at least a little bit. And he didn't. I think he read like 8 pass rushing snaps in the game. So we'll see in this game. But I got USC winning as well, man. 34-31. I think it'll be a little bit of a shootout. I just trust Lincoln Riley and Miller Moss against this LSU defense more than Nussmeier against an improved USC defense. I can tell you I'm pretty confident they're going to be improved. I don't know if I'm as confident as LSU's defense being improved. So that's why I got USC winning this game and pulling off a slight upset, Dawn. And I kind of hate this, Dawn, but we had the same team winning all 5 of these games.
I know. We don't do it too often. And again, for me, the tightest one is that Penn State-West Virginia game. There's just something about it. It's like that's going to be a wicked environment in Morgantown.
Do you want to switch just to get one on the board or no?
I'm not. I'm ahead one already. I'll stay ahead one right now. And that'll just be the one that I know if Westfall wins, I'm going to be kicking myself.
You're right. Okay, so you are ahead right now. You're 1-0 on the season. I'm 0-1. We're actually going to play a game now, Dawn, where we're really going to be putting our knowledge to the test here. We're going to be picking a team to win as an upset, as an underdog. And how we're going to keep score in this game is whatever their money line is, you get that amount of points if they win. So say if I say, hey, this team who's plus 200 according to DraftKings right now, and they win, I'll get 200 points for that, right? So we each, outside of these 5 games, we each took one team that we think as an underdog is going to win. Eli, producer Eli back there, also has a team. So let's start off with producer Eli and hear what his first upset pick of the season is.
Well, so my pick is probably not as founded in stats as you guys. I kind of went off vibes for the first one of the year.
Love that.
So I'm going to pick the North Texas Mean Green over the South Alabama Jaguars. And I think the thing that people are overlooking a little bit in this game, when you're going to the special teams grade, I mean, you look at North Texas, they're an 82.3 special team grade, whereas South Alabama's a 71. It's a three. You got to win in all three facets. And I think I like North Texas in this one at plus 164.
We didn't mess special teams once in this entire episode.
This is why he runs the show. Really,
yeah,
this is why.
Because I love
that he gets all three phases. I should have mentioned my Grosso Award pick from Miami, Andres Borregala. Should have mentioned that.
True.
Part. But, you know, maybe the best kicker in the country. Of course, we saw what kicking could do in that Florida State game too, didn't we? That's going to be a theme in these close games. But no, I don't hate that at all. That was one that was on my list. Chandler Morris coming in there from TCU down in North. He was supposed to be the guy to take over at TCU, and he had some injuries last year and couldn't get off the ground, right, with all his injuries. And then Josh Hoover takes over at TCU, so that's an interesting story down there at North Texas for sure.
Speaking of TCU, real quick, this is completely off topic, but that was pretty funny. Did you see that the Chargers cut Max Duggan? Nothing has to do with the game, right? But Harbaugh, there's a little bit of Harbaugh's like,
who was it?
You're not going to be on my roster.
Who was it?
What it did to me.
I don't remember who was it that called him right-handed Tim Tebow.
Is that you?
No, it wasn't. I heard it from somewhere
else. I kind of love it, but I just thought it was funny. Jim Harbaugh, who lost him in the playoff.
Oh, you know what? Okay, now I get it. You know, I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah.
Oh,
I thought of that. I was like, that's pretty funny.
He got extra tired of seeing Duggan throw to Quentin Johnston. Yeah. Is that what it was?
Oh, yeah. Good point. Oh, you can't cut Quentin Johnston yet.
Right.
So he's probably.
No, there's a little more money involved in that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Eli, by the way, 164. That's by far the biggest out of all of us.
He's taking the biggest long shot this week.
So if he hits, he's up no matter what.
That's a fun pick. That was definitely on my list. I like that one.
All right, Don, who is your upset pick of the week?
I have a tight one and one that I've noticed the money line odds, and this has gotten closer to even in the last like week or two, I think, as we've been talking about them. I've got UNLV going into Houston and winning. I think, and look, UNLV, they haven't announced their starting quarterback yet. It seems that they're going to hold that information until game day, but I'm pretty sure they're leaning towards Matt Sluka, the transfer from Holy Cross, who's a guy I've been hyping up lately. He's a wicked dual threat. He's got FBS wins in his career while he was at Holy Cross. He had a game last year. He ran for 330 yards and had, I think, another 80-yard touchdown that was called back due to penalty. So, I mean, he's a wicked dual threat if he's the one starting. Houston had the 110th ranked defense according to our defensive grading last year. I know they have Donovan Smith. They lost their top receiver. They lost four of their starting five offensive linemen, and their defense really struggled. I think the
defense lost some guys in D-line, too.
Yeah.
Transferred out of there.
Yeah. I know one or two of them went to Colorado, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the Rebels go down there and they put up some points on Houston. I've got them. They're my Mountain West champions as well. I think they're going to get their year off started right in Houston.
Love that. So plus 102 for Dawn. Mine I'm going with is Miami of Ohio over Northwestern. Currently Miami of Ohio plus 124 on DraftKings right now. And I like the Red Hawks a lot, man. That defense last year was absolutely elite. One of the 15 best in the country in terms of EPA per play last year. And they brought back 8 of the 13 defensive players who played at least 300 snaps last year, right? So really good defense last year that brought back a ton of key players. And then Northwestern starting Mike Wright at quarterback, who has been a turnover machine at quarterback in his career. I'm worried about the Wildcats. I understand the Wildcats had a great year last year going 8-5, but I think the clock will strike midnight on this little Cinderella run right now. I think Miami, Ohio goes into Chicago and takes down Northwestern in week one.
That's going to be a slugfest. Mike Wright, the one thing Mike Wright can do is run the ball, and I assume it's going to be a really run-heavy offense. Northwestern lost some defensive pieces in the portal, Rod Hurd, Garnet Hollis, guys like that. I'm curious to see with the Red Hawks how Brett Gabbert's going to look coming off an injury. Suffered an injury, a season-ending injury in midseason last year, and they actually won the MAC championship without him. But Brett Gabbert's really the center of that team, and they need to find some skill players around him. They lost a few guys on the outside and at running back too. So kind of building that offense, but I think that's going to be a low-scoring game, and that's another game that was really, really high on my list too. I think they could go in there and win for sure.
Yeah, so just to recap, I have Miami, Ohio over Northwestern, plus 124. Dawn has UNLV, plus 102 over Houston, and Eli has North Texas, plus 164 over South Alabama. I'm kind of proud of Eli, Dawn, because we picked two games that had a Power 5 team or Power 4 team in it. Eli just went off the rails and just picked a Group of 5 game.
That's a good
love
one.
Love it.
It's a good one for sure.
He's deep in the weeds.
It's one that I looked at, but I really like this UNLV team. Ricky White also. Good luck covering him.
Yeah.
I mean, over 1,400 yards last year. Ricky White is one of the best receivers in the country. Get to know him, and I'm telling you, I've been hyping up Matt Sluka, and if they start, say, Haj Malik Williams, UNLV is going to make me look bad on it, because that's all I've been – I was up till, 2 a.m. one night watching Holy Cross tape. I'm just like, who is this guy? This is crazy. But, if it's him, you've got a real dual threat issue on your hands, and Ricky White, I'm telling you, if you're playing UNLV, look out, man. If you get to watch UNLV at any time on TV and you get to see Ricky White, this dude's an absolute monster.
Yeah. We got a monster week one schedule, though. As you can see, these five games, including more games that we didn't even cover, man, that are really, really intriguing. Just to remind you guys, Sunday morning, wake up early with us at 9 a.m. We are recapping all of the biggest takeaways in college football, affecting the playoff, affect even at maybe a little Heisman talk. It's really early for that, but we could talk a little bit of Heisman. And the big thing, Dawn, we are going to be revealing the PFF grades from that past the day before, man. So I'm excited about that, man. That Sunday morning live show, we're going to be
feeling awful considering we've been sitting on our couches all day long watching college football and had to wake up early for this. But man, I can't wait to do the Sunday morning live show.
It's going to be fantastic going over games. It's honestly my favorite part is why did they win? Why did they lose? Who played the best? What was the reason? What can we take from it going into next week? It's going to be a boatload of fun. And then we get to roll over into a Sunday game with USC and LSU. So,
oh yeah. I mean,
well, obviously these four are going to be really good games. And then like you mentioned, the whole slate's great. And it's just great that a whole slate of college football is back, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And a Monday night game at Florida State Boston College. We can talk about it.
And
a
Monday night game with a lot of suspense to it after Florida. I mean, BC gave them problems last year.
Yep.
It's not a gimme at all. Castellanos could give them issues too, but we'll get more on that on Sunday.
I can't wait for that, man. So just a reminder, every single Tuesday night we are doing our preview of the five or even more biggest games of the week, and then Sunday morning around 9 a.m. Eastern time, we're going to be recapping the week of college football and a little bit of look ahead to the following weeks as well. But for Dalton Wasserman, I'm Max Chadwick. Thanks for tuning in to the first live show of the PFF College Football Show.